You're listening to the Ideal Business Show with Pat Rigsby. This is the place where fitness entrepreneurs come to learn how to earn more income, have more impact, and enjoy more freedom. Now, here's your host, Pat Rigsby.
Everyone, Pat Rigsby here again with another episode of the Ideal Business Show, and we're going to kind of flip things around today. I have brought my good friend and my colleague on so many of the things that I do with PatRigsby.com and some of the other projects that I participate in, Justin Yule, on, and he is actually going to be interviewing me as the guest for the Ideal Business Show today. Justin, thank you for helping out and lending a hand today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Flipping switches from one show to the next, so that's outstanding. I'm looking forward to getting deep into, you know, the behind the scenes with Mr. Pat Rigsby and sharing some of the stuff that, you know, I've been able to learn over the years and working side by side with you for so long now. I think there's going to be some things that the listeners probably maybe didn't know from back in the day, some personal past stuff, and we'll get into some, you know, evolving of your business from trainer to gym owner to coach and the things we're doing now. So, you know, I'd love to actually kind of start things off maybe a little bit further back. You have a tremendous sports background, both playing and coaching, and I always find it fascinating hearing some of the old stories. So I think it would kind of be cool to maybe start there and let people know, like, a little bit more about that background, that part of your life.
So, you know, really back as far as I can remember, I was definitely a sports guy. I played, you know, a variety of sports growing up, but the main thing was baseball, and, you know, I got to continue on and had a pretty inauspicious post-high school career with dabbling in college and even a little bit in an independent professional league where, you know, I think I figured out pretty quickly that my future was not in playing baseball. But at that same point in time, I think that I got to figure out some things about maybe more of what I wanted to do professionally, that I wanted to be involved professionally in things that I was excited about. I mean, I grew up, you know, really learning a lot of the takeaways that I got in what I think, you know, was the scholastic point of my life. Most of the real lessons that lasted along the way came from sports. And I said, you know, I mean, I want to stay involved in that sort of stuff. My dad had a small business. He still has it to this day, like a garage, like an auto repair business. And so, you know, I mean, I grew up doing everything from serving as the janitor, sweeping the floors, to some really elementary, you know, repair work, from doing brakes, you know, and oil changes, and a little bit of stuff maybe notch above that, but nothing really, really sophisticated. But what I figured out was I didn't like it at all. It was something that I watched the clock the entire time I was there. And, you know, I just was counting minutes. And I knew, you know, from spending so much of my additional time involved in sports that, like, man, I want to spend my time doing things that I'm excited about. I want to spend my time working in things that I don't just tolerate. I mean, this whole watching the clock all day and just trying to get through the day in order to make some money, I mean, that seems like a really kind of miserable way to exist for the next 40 or 50, you know, years in a work life, right? So I stayed in sports. I took a job, you know, with that minor league baseball team as the assistant general manager and oversaw a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, from sponsorship stuff to even, like, the promotions during the game. I kind of doubled up and even played the role of an assistant coach at that level, too. And so I was really immersed there. I was trying to build a resume in the sports world because I knew that's what I was excited about. And really, it was kind of at a crossroads for me. I had finished my bachelor's degree, and I had sent out about 40 letters to different college baseball programs just looking for, you know, a volunteer spot on a staff or a graduate assistantship I had been like a student assistant at the university where I got my degree and where I, you know, played for a while at. And, you know, there was just not going to be any longevity there. There was no real job opportunity to continue in that role there. But of the 40 letters that I sent out, I was 0 for 40. I probably got 5 letters back thanking me and wishing me luck. And, you know, the other 35 didn't even bother to write back. About that time, the job came open at the university where I'd gone to school. And the coach who had been my high school coach and kind of ascended up and took this role actually came and sought me out and said, look, I'm leaving. You should apply for the job. You know, I'm not happy with the direction the university is going. They're downsizing the athletic department. They're actually taking away the scholarships and they're going to be non-scholarships. So it's an uphill battle I don't want to fight, but it might be a good kind of stepping stone or an early opportunity for you. And, you know, I applied somehow. I got the job. I mean, golly, I mean, it seems like an eternity ago, but I got the job on September 14th, 1995, and I was a shade over 23 years old there, just turned 23, and was the youngest baseball coach in the country for my first 2 seasons. And it probably should be mentioned that the starting salary to be the head coach at this university was $3,000. So you can imagine that I kind of had to just couple that with any number of other things. I had, you know, already gotten a personal training certification and actually kind of served as the de facto strength coach for the minor league baseball team before and for a couple of the teams at the university in my senior year, or maybe I should put in my 5th year, so my 2nd senior year. So I got kind of a part-time contract doing that. I did everything from announce volleyball games, train a few people on the side at the sports center to, I mean, eventually, I mean, I got a certified pool operator credential and kind of managed part of the fitness facility. And like we had kind of an attached health club at the university for a while. And that's where I kind of transitioned and said, look, I'm going to pursue the things that are important to me, the things that I've learned a lot about, the things that I've studied that interest me, and I'm going to make that my career path instead of just taking, I guess, the traditional job route that, you know, I think so many people, you know, kind of pursue by default. And I think that my parents probably wanted me to pursue early on. Right. So I don't know if that's much of a backstory there for you, but it's, you know, I think that time in my life set the stage for so much that's happened since.
For sure. I mean, you completely, obviously, you know, kind of buck the system of going through that traditional route, obviously facing adversity, doing whatever it takes, you know, kind of grinding things out, which is such a huge part of being an entrepreneur. Let's skip ahead now. I'm sure a lot of people have heard, you know, you had a very successful career as a coach, but ultimately the entrepreneurial spirit, I think, was within you, and it was time to kind of go off and do your thing. So what did that look like at first?
Well, you know, my last couple of years as a coach, there was a lot of friction between me and the administration. You know, I was incredibly grateful for the opportunity those first couple of years, but then the stuff that kind of drove the previous 2 coaches away, you know, the limited resources, the lack of maybe administrative or university-wide support for the program, you know, it just seemed like a dead-end street. So I started to kind of, I guess, embrace a lot of the things that manifested themselves in my business career later on then, right? Like, I started to study marketing because I needed to figure out how to, you know, how to recruit more effectively. We didn't have as many resources to sell, so I needed to figure out how to sell what we had better. I had to kind of figure out how to position us, how to brand us as something unique, as something different. And, you know, I mean, in truth, I had to hustle like crazy because I had to make up for the limited resources we had. But these are all things that I think, you know, it kind of didn't fit inside the box of the job that I was in. And And I don't want to suggest that every coach doesn't hustle, but I mean, I was in kind of a unique spot where I didn't have a family, I didn't have kids, and I didn't have a wife. So I could kind of just pour everything into that instead of trying to find some semblance of balance in a life that didn't really need it at that point. So
it almost sounds like you treated this as a business. I mean, it was your business,
you know,
before you're even in business.
Yeah, and looking back, it was kind of my proving ground for business, except there was a degree of security because the framework was already there for me, right? I just had to go and build and do whatever. And it was a lot of fun. It was a neat experience. I mean, I get asked all the time, like, well, would you be a better coach now? And I'm like, no, I wouldn't, because I'm smarter now, I would like to think, and more experienced, but I wouldn't be willing to put in 100 hours a week to do it now. And there's something to be said for that with early stage entrepreneurs or coaches in that case, because I ran it that way. But then what I found was that, you know, it wasn't a business. It was a university supported, you know, athletic program that had very limiting constraints. It had a lot of administrative bureaucracy. And so, you know, those last couple of years I knew I needed to move on, but I mean, you don't know what you don't know. And I didn't have any idea what I would do after that, right? Like, this was truly my identity. You know, I had done a radio show there. I mean, I was on billboards. I was on a commercial. I mean, literally, like, this was, if somebody knew me in that town, in fact, if I go back to my hometown now, and I walk in a restaurant, there's at least a better than 50-50 chance that somebody is going to call me coach. And that was it. That is what I kind of viewed myself as. And so I knew that I wanted to stay in something that I enjoyed, something I was passionate about, because I knew that I was willing to work as hard as I worked because it was something that excited me. I wouldn't have been willing to put in those types of hours had I been – you know, turning wrenches at my dad's garage. I would have been like, hey, the minimum required work here is 45 hours a week. Cool. That's what I'm doing. And, you know, so I knew that I needed to be, you know, committed to something that excited me. And really, though, for me, the only things that kind of fit that criteria were sports and fitness. You know, that's what I liked. I had always gravitated to fitness and strength and conditioning world because, you know, I was an undersized athlete trying to get bigger and stronger to be more competitive, you know, and really studied the history of it. I was reading books about the history of physical culture, I mean, when I was in high school. And I would call up people who were kind of legend. I would find out people's phone number and, you know, guys who wrote books and guys who were kind of legends in the field. I'd find their phone number and I'd call them up and ask them questions, and they would be kind of shell-shocked, like, how did this kid find me? And they talked to me. And I kind of did the same thing with baseball. I studied everything about it. It wasn't just like this surface level interest. I mean, to this day, I can recite the most absurd amount of random baseball trivia anybody would ever hope to know. And so I was like, you know, I need to build my career around this stuff because it's what I believe I should be doing. I should be working on something that, man, if I'm working extra hours on it, it doesn't feel like work. I'm excited to learn it. I'm excited to pour myself into it. So in theory, all that sounded great, but I didn't know what it looked like, and I had never run a business. You know, so I kind of loosely knew the field, but, you know, I wasn't 100% committed to detaching myself from coaching. You know, I was kind of unsure, and I still interviewed for a couple jobs, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years. Like, I'd interview for a job or two every year for the next 2 or 3 years in baseball, and I was offered a few jobs and just never really felt like I needed to go back on that route. But somebody along the way kind of, I think, threw me a bit of a lifeline. I resigned, and I got a decent severance, actually, because the vice president was so eager to be done with me. And so it gave me a few months of runway to kind of figure out some stuff. And I was offered the job running a baseball and performance facility in Ohio, in a different part of Ohio, but in an area that I was pretty familiar because I had recruited a lot there. And a lot of my better players came out of that kind of general region. So I picked up, I moved there, turned around this facility that, you know, I inherited it in the spring. The previous summer, they had lost $70,000 over the course of the summer because the seasonality, like they would, you know, clean up during the winter, but then when kids would go off to play their games and play, you know, play the spring season or the summer season, it was like a ghost town. So I came in and, you know, they were paying me more than I had made as a college coach, which it didn't stay $3,000 forever. By the end, it was about $30,000 a year. And so, you know, they're paying me a little bit more, but then they gave me some incentives like, hey, you can get an equity stake in this if you meet these benchmarks. You know, we actually were minimally profitable that summer. We were, you know, I mean, less than $100 in the black, but we were actually in the black. So you're talking about a $70,000 swing in a year, and it was great. And it was like, you know what, I can do this. I'm okay. I'm kind of figuring out some of this business stuff. I didn't necessarily understand the, you know, a lot of the financial side of it, but I knew how to market. I knew how to sell because I'd been running camps and getting clients forever. I was figuring out some of that other stuff as I went, but it starting to make sense. And it was exciting to me because there was this competition, right? It's like, okay, here's what we did last year on this month. So year over year, here's what we got to do. And so, you know, it still fulfilled that competitive drive that I had the coach and as a player. And I was still in kind of that world, that baseball world that it, you know, had been kind of my identity for so long. So, I mean, in all honesty, I don't know what would have provoked me to leave in the immediate future there, because the job was getting better. I was getting paid more. I was gaining a little bit of equity and would have gained more over time. And then the people who own the business own the building and leased it to the business. And the building was actually, you know, as opposed to so many of these type of like baseball facilities or gymnastics facilities or whatever else that are in like light industrial parks, this place was like two streets over from a mall. And they ended out selling it for a huge profit. And so they just kind of nixed the whole baseball facility thing. And they, like many people who open businesses like that, you know, they had gotten into it because they had kids that were younger in baseball. Their kids were graduating, playing college. And so they weren't really motivated to going down that path. They're like, look, I mean, yeah, it's profitable now, but it's not as profitable as like the insurance agency that we own or the real estate company we own.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I took a little bit of a bonus check when they dissolved the company for what my equity was. Had a couple opportunities to, people were like clients of ours that liked what we did. And so many fitness professionals that might be listening to this can relate, you know, clients. You know, I'm training their kids. They're doing good things. They're like, hey, we'll back you and you can open a facility. And for whatever reason, I just didn't feel like I was there yet. I'm like, you know, this is fine, but I'm not necessarily ready to go spend somebody else's money to open a business because I feel like I probably know 50% of what I need to know to start. I took a job running the personal training department in a Gold's Gym. And you know, by that point, I felt pretty good about my ability to sell and to market. You know, I mean, selling some personal training just didn't seem like a daunting task considering the fact that I've been, you know, selling or persuading parents to entrust their firstborn to me for the next 4 years, right? So, you know, they gave me this kind of lagging training department. So this gym that did like $7,000 in personal training sales the previous month, I come in next month, you know, we do like 18,000, and the next month we do like 36,000. And so by that month, I'm running all the training and all the Gold's Gyms in the state of Kentucky, and even, you know, a couple of them into Southern Ohio. And at that point, I go from, you know, having a staff of like 5 trainers in my gym to having a staff of like 75 trainers. and started to kind of fill in the blanks on the areas that I wasn't good. I mean, I didn't enjoy the way the training kind of happened in that big box club. And I'm sure there are other big box clubs that do it much, much better. In fact, I guess the experience you had, Justin, was much different.
Mm-hmm.
But
it just seems to be a recurring theme of you getting put in places, and the baseball, from coaching to the baseball facility to now this, it's like this knack for turning facilities around, which I think obviously from you being my business coach to the coaching that you do now, I mean, you have this knack for, I don't know if it's maybe seeing things that other people don't see, if it's being such a student, but you keep turning these businesses around.
You know, I mean, it's interesting when you say it, because that wasn't like the first thing that would come to my mind. I mean, it kind of came to my mind with a baseball one, but in the other ones, I guess it's like, if I step back and think about it, I just really have to simplify things in my mind, like what's important and what's not, and just focus on what's important. And I think that if I do have a knack for seeing things, it's like, okay, this is simple. Here's where we need to focus our time to get the biggest bang for our buck. I mean, if I look back at baseball, it was, well, you know, all these guys are really worried about edging the baselines on the field or this, that, or the other. I'm like, I need to go get better players. And so, you know, that's kind of been a recurring theme. But, you know, so I did the goal of the gym thing. I literally had written down in my planner that my plan was 2 years there, and I was going to treat this as my doctorate, right? Like, I had gotten a bachelor's, a master's, I'd enrolled but never actually started classes in a doctoral program, and man, I don't know that it would have ever gone anywhere anyway, because I think I probably just did it thinking, well, this will give me a pay raise, but it just, you know, like, this was my practical doctoral type of experience. And so I just kind of put my head down and started down this path, but really less than a year and a half into it, I was presented with an opportunity to go with a partner and open up a business in, at the time, it was kind of a big trend, right? Like, health clubs were outsourcing their personal training departments to subcontractors, like companies, instead of just letting independent contractors one by one come in. They would outsource the whole thing to another company and charge that company rent. So there was this opportunity to step in, have the rights to a training department, have the rights to all their retail, all that stuff, and stepped in there, took that business from literally zero. I mean, and when I walked into that town, I knew zero people, literally, to like 420 clients in 18 months. And then at the same time, about a year into that location, opened up a health club. You know, it was almost exactly a year today, opened up a health club about an hour and a half down the road. Originally had a third business partner who was the acting manager in that club, but then bought him out after about a year and grew that like crazy. I mean, it was the fastest growing club in that franchise because it was an Anytime Fitness at the time. And I'm sure there have been hundreds of them that ascended faster after that. And then had, you know, about 350 training clients in that location. And so everything just kind of kept moving forward. And it was always, you know, tied to this health and fitness. And, you know, it all went back to those strengths that I think that I was developing right at the beginning of my professional career when I was 23 and took over as a baseball coach. So
before we jump to the next stage, because I kind of know the story from here, I've actually learned a lot that I didn't know up to this point. But again, you know, going from zero to 400 clients, I mean, I know there's obviously a lot of fitness professionals listening to this. So, I mean, this is what you do, but you could take a couple of key points that did it grow so fast? I mean, we know you teach all the time the keys to growing a business, but like, it's just amazing that this happened so fast. I mean, if you could look back now, was it the hustle? Was it, you know, this being such a student of marketing? Was it that you were doing it different than everybody else and you were changing the game? I mean, what do you think it was?
You know, I mean, it was more or less a combination of, I would tell you, three things, right? The first one was that we did it differently than other people. We were bringing something kind of new and different to the market. There were a handful of people in that town. It certainly wasn't a town dense with personal trainers, but there were a handful of people in that town, and they had always done things kind of in the old standby way. Hey, I'm going to sell you a 12-pack of personal training sessions for $480, and then when that runs out, I'll sell you another 12-pack. And we sold 12-month contracts and 30-minute sessions, and people were billed monthly. So, you know, somebody bought a 30-minute session for, you know, for, I think when we started, it was $30 a session. You know, if they're doing three times a week, I think it was like $4,320. But, I mean, broken up, it's $360 a month. So we said, okay, well, what works? What works in health clubs? What works when people buy a car, when they do a mortgage? They want to know what their monthly payment is. So we did it differently so people could fit it in their budget. So it seemed like, hey, you're getting more value, but for us, yeah, we're getting a consistent client for the next 12 months. And so we did things differently. And that was a big kind of step in the right direction for a town that was not the most affluent town. It wasn't like an economically depressed town or anything, but it was just a kind of a middle of pack town in central Kentucky. And the second thing was that, man, we sold. I mean, it was a, like, I never, ever, ever got bogged down with the fact that, hey, no, my job is just training clients, or my staff's job is just training clients. I mean, everybody, like, we did sales training on a weekly basis. And with some people, we were doing sales training three times a week if they were going to take a higher volume of sessions. So we knew that selling was kind of the first domino. It was kind of the thing that made the world go round, right? So it was really ingrained throughout our culture. And, you know, and I think that so many people find selling to be something like they tolerate. For me, I think I've always felt like it was just very much like recruiting in sports. It is the catalyst for everything else. Without effective sales, you don't have anything else. Without recruiting good players, you're never going to be successful. So it was just something that I think permeated everything we did. And then the third was we had a really straightforward and simple scoreboard where, you know, we set goals and we set them up and knocked them down, and we incentivized people and we highlighted them all the time, and, you know, goals for the number of people we're going to sit down and do what we called, you know, an introductory session, what we might call a success session now. You know, but we basically said, look, here's the business on a dry erase board. We've got to go out here and we've got to hit targets, because, you know, my entire sports life, everybody's measured by a scoreboard. And that's the beauty of a lot of the stuff that goes on in sports, is it's not that subjective. I mean, the scoreboard's going to tell you, did you win or lose today? And so, I mean, I think there are a lot of other smaller things. Like, we did a good job with the retention. We had a good community and culture and all those things. I think we did really, I mean, in all honesty, I think we were ahead of our time in many, many ways there. And when I look back at it now, things that people are doing now, I mean, man, I'm like, man, we were doing that in 2005. But, I mean, if you were to say, hey, what are the three biggest things that allow you to go from zero to 400 plus clients in one location and zero to 350 in another, I mean, I think it's those three for sure.
That's gold. I mean, that right there is just golden nuggets. Thank you. Okay, so now I know that your business exploded. You get to kind of almost like a crossroads of, hey, more locations, where we're going to go, what's going to happen next. And ironically, you know, you and I have had this discussion recently in my business. So take us through that, and then there's that fateful trip up to Connecticut that kind of switched gears for you.
So, you know, I think, you know, coming from a small town, Portsmouth, Ohio, where I think a lot of the things that happen where somebody has professional success, they've adopted something from like a bigger city and they brought it back here or whatever. You know, it's not – most of the towns I was around early on, I mean, they're smaller towns. So they weren't like this really forward-thinking, progressive place. And, I mean, there's some charm in that, but obviously there's some limitation to it. So I guess the only thing that I ever thought was possible to grow was just like, okay, bigger location, more locations. That's it. There are two options. That's it. And I just kind of always assumed more. And I had had this loose goal set in my mind of having 12 locations within like the next 5 years, which seemed pretty aggressive. But with the kind of early stage success that we were having, I was like, well, I mean, sure, that's possible. And, you know, we're going around looking at real estate. We've got a guy who even indicates an interest in investing, and this guy now is the biggest franchisee of Planet Fitness in the Midwest. So, I mean, obviously he kind of back up any talk that he might have thrown out then. And it just, you know, it was like got really close on like three different locations and just kind of put the brakes on. I mean, some of it didn't feel right. Some of it didn't really shake out the way that we expected. And about that time went to, well, I guess that was, let me back up a bit. Like, so not too long before that, we had gone to a conference, the Ryan Lee Boot Camp in Connecticut. And we, when I say we, it was like my business partner, my wife Holly, and three of our employees. So there were like six of us piled in a van and drove up and, you know, stayed at a Super 8 motel to kind of save money since we were, you know, had multiple people tagging along with us. And, you know, and I see these folks on stage who, you know, I'm like, man, with what we're doing, we should be up there. I mean, people talking about business when they're on stage that have like 50, 75, you know, 80 clients, something like that. And people that I know now and people who've come to me for business coaching, you know, they were the ones up there, you know, talking about their business. And I'm like, man, we're in the wrong spot. And so the whole way back, I'm like saying, man, we need to be doing this. We need to be doing this. And ultimately, that was like the precursor to me launching my first product in collaboration with, you know, my friend Eric Ruth, who it was called the Personal Training Money Machine. And it basically just documented our business model. And that went over pretty well. And then created a second product, like an ebook called Fitness Riches. And so this is all kind of happening at the same time that we're scouting these other locations. But frankly, I saw the info product stuff and the online stuff at that time as kind of a means to an end. I'm like, well, hey, this can fund some, you know, some cash for us to scale quicker, for us to add more locations quicker, to pay for build outs, to buy equipment, selfishly to pay off some student loans. But I didn't see it as like the end itself. It didn't seem tangible enough to me. And, you know, but then we start getting close to having to make a decision on expansion. And I just said, look, you know, I mean, if I'm gone now a couple days a week at this location that's, you know, an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes away, am I ever going to be home when we have six, when we have eight locations, let alone 12? And, man, I didn't get married till I was 33 years old. And at that point, you know, Holly had, you know, Tyler already, Tyler was, you know, three at the time. And, you know, so I didn't really get to, you know, have a wife or a stepson or anything like that until, you know, I was 33. I'm like, man, I waited this long to have a family. I don't want to miss it. And so just decided to put more emphasis on the local business stuff that we already had and scale by way of growing the stuff that we're doing virtually. Online stuff, be it the helping fitness professionals grow their business or, you know, the opportunities kind of having a place in that market and starting to position, you know, what we were doing as a leader in that market. It was opening doors. I mean, opening doors for an acquisition of ownership in the IYCA, you know, later, you know, equipment company and all this other stuff. And so I was like, okay, this can be a real thing. This can, it's not just a means to an end. It is the end. It is the business. And it just took off. You know, the brick and mortar businesses continued to do well. And then over time, in fact, you know, we were kind of a victim of our own success in one sense, because the personal training business that we subleased from a health club was outperforming the health club. So when it came time to renew our lease, they weren't really eager to renew the lease. And we kind of just, we were out of a spot, right? So we were down to the one location. About that time was when, you know, I moved from that town to Louisville. The stuff that was, you know, Trainer's Inner Circle and then eventually Bootcamp Blueprint, it snowballed, you know, launched a first mastermind, launched a second mastermind, and eventually created, you know, two franchises. The first being, you know, Athletic Revolution, and the second one, Fitness Revolution, which, I mean, none of that franchising anymore. But at the time, they were both the top ranked franchise in Entrepreneur Magazine's Franchise 500 in their respective categories. And, you know, and it just kind of kept going. But yeah, I mean, it's funny to look back that it was all, you know, really kind of built on the foundation of going out there and saying, man, I don't want to work in a garage. I want to do things that I actually like.
Yeah. And I mean, and obviously I kind of came in that stage, Bootcamp Blueprint. I was probably one of the first people to sign up for that. We originally kind of got connected. But then, you know, and I saw a lot of that growth over the years. I was fortunate enough to be a part of it, to be invited in and work on your team. But then, you know, interestingly enough, ultimately a change occurred. I think a lot of it had to do with this company getting so big and some of the bureaucracy that maybe was familiar from the college days to, you know, differences of opinions and styles of business partners. You know, you kind of looking at family and Alex and all those things and saying, you know what, is this really ideal? So, you know, I'd love you to touch on that. Obviously, we're going to get to that piece. But I want to preface it because I think a lot of people listening, and I know me as a listener and someone who works with you and studies with you, these are big things to consider when you're looking at, you know, we always talk about you're building your ideal business to as a vehicle to your ideal life. And this amazing business that was just getting, it was exploding, started to chip away at that ideal life. So touch on that.
Well, you know, I mean, it was really, you know, I mean, it was kind of a fun ascension, but like anything, right? I mean, there were lots of twists and turns along the way. And, you know, eventually my, you know, we had, Holly and I had, you know, a son in 2010, Alex. So at that point, you know, we had, you know, Tyler, who was, you know, 9 years old, and Alex that, you know, was just born. It's like, you know, I don't want to be gone for 6 days at a time when I'm gone, and I don't want to do that, you know, eight times a year and then feel like I'm constantly on conference calls and, you know, and I'm essentially in a business where, yeah, I'm the owner, but, or, you know, one of, you know, two primary owners, and we had some other shareholders and some ventures, and it just, it's like, man, I don't want to feel like an employee of the business that I created. But it had gotten so big that, you know, when you're navigating so many other variables, everybody else's schedules and events and so many other moving parts, you know, between that and then, you know, the partner I'd had having a very different vision, very much a corporate kind of, I think, big kind of, I guess, Fortune 500 type of vision, where it's like, hey, I want, you know, very much a rigid structure, everybody work in one place and this type of office and these types of meetings. And me, I'm very much entrepreneurial and kind of like the autonomy and freedom and flexibility. And there was this, you know, a bit of a tug of war. And it's like, well, you know what? I mean, they go their way and I want to build a business reflective of my values and my goals. And really, I want to coach people who kind of mesh up with that. And so I ended out in 2014 deciding to sell my stake and all of that. And actually, it took until the beginning of 2015 to finalize all of that and then launch my new brand. And, you know, and I think so many of us have gone through that, right? It doesn't matter if we're talking about being an employee somewhere or our business evolving into something that wasn't really what we envisioned, or, you know, even to take it out of a business context. I mean, being in a relationship that just kind of evolved over time, you're like, you know what, if I was doing this over today, this isn't where I'd be. And, you know, and I was very fortunate to be in a position where I could, even with a family, I mean, knowing there's a little bit of risk and everything, but I was in a secure enough spot that I could kind of start fresh and, you know, build something new that was aligned with my values and my goals and what I wanted my legacy to be and what I wanted for my family and really who I wanted to work with. And that's kind of, you know, where this whole, you know, PatRigsby.com and the things that we do under that umbrella, from VFM to the Ideal Business Academy to the Mastermind, that's kind of where all of that began.
Yeah, I think it's just a real thing that I think a lot of business owners need to sit back. And I think we're in the mindset that you're supposed to get huge and have, especially with the gyms, have lots of locations. And before you know it, the whole reason you got into business, like for me, I left. I mean, I, you know, climbed the ladder in a big corporation and I left because it just didn't fit for me. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But then be careful. Don't turn your own business into what you got into, you know, what you left. What I think is truly awesome and inspiring is, you know, without getting into all the details, you know, here you are today in a business that is much smaller, much more simple, much more life friendly, yet it's more profitable and you're making more money than you ever have. That to me is,
you know,
the ultimate success story.
You know, and I think it's interesting because I don't know that that was my expectation going in, right? Like, my expectation was I'm going to simplify some things and I'm going to enjoy, you know, along with Holly, enjoy the boys while they're young, because they're not going to be young forever. And in fact, I mean, Tyler's taller than me now. And, you know, and I'll, you know, work with people that I want to work with. And so I'll be doing better work and I'll have, you know, I'll be happier when I'm not doing work, because the carryover from work will always be a positive versus sometimes people take the negative aspects of work back with them and it can kind of permeate into their personal life. And so I think that was my expectation. But, you know, I think that when we're doing the right thing for us with the right people, then, you know, it is probably not too uncommon that it exceeds expectations and it snowballs in a really positive way. And yeah, I mean, that's what's happened. It's been a really rewarding time because, yeah, I mean, I certainly, from a financial standpoint or from an impact standpoint, I'm far better off than I probably could have ever imagined when this transition occurred. But beyond that, you know, I'm working fewer hours than I probably have ever worked in my adult life. In fact, I know that I'm working fewer hours than I ever worked in my adult life. And then, but the hours I'm working are way more fulfilling because I feel like I'm 90% of the time I'm doing the stuff that I need to be doing. And I think that in both my time as a baseball coach and my time, you know, with the other businesses that I started towards the end in both, I mean, they very much paralleled one another in many ways. Towards my end with both of them, I felt like I was spending about 30% of my time in my, like, I mean, if you want to call it unique ability or areas of strength or zone of genius or whatever people want to refer to it as, instead of spending the 90% of my time there that I tend to now. And if that's ever an endorsement for people playing to their strengths and spending their time where they're best, it's like, I mean, I've got a business that probably does a quarter or maybe even 20% gross revenue, what, you know, what my network of businesses did in the past, but I personally make considerably more. And I'm doing it 100%, I think, because this alignment of being in the right place, doing the right stuff with the right people. And I think you get that right, and the sky's the limit.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been an honor and a pleasure to be a part of that. I'm so glad you've taken me along with you. We were able to do so many things together. I think maybe a great way to kind of wrap this up, put a bow on it, is you've explained like kind of like the three lanes or three like pillars of your business, the kind of division, the division one and two you talk about, and that allows you to play in division three. I think that's a good lesson, a good way to describe what PatRigsby.com is. I think that's also a great lesson in there. I think that'd be a great way to wrap up.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, the people who are like in our mastermind groups have heard me talk about really my three divisions of my business. And the first division is it's basically products and things that are not really highly time, you know, sensitive or don't require a lot of my day-to-day, you know, heavy interaction. I mean, something like virtual fitness mastermind requires the most depth of interaction of anything that might fall into that category one. But, you know, I mean, but still that coaching aspect of that is largely, you know, in a Facebook group. It's not doing live consulting or coaching days or masterminds or anything like that, not phone coaching. So division one is very much products and programs that aren't necessarily really, really high in high volume of time-based engagement. And division two is the coaching work that I do. And it might mean like the producer challenge at the kind of smaller, you know, 6-week kind of time frame, up to the masterminds, the private consulting, and the Ideal Business Academy. And so that's the really coaching-centric division. Now, those two divisions are 100% owned by me. And, you know, I may bring in somebody to publish a product with, or I may lean on someone like yourself, primarily yourself, Justin, to help me deliver that coaching or that, you know, that experience in that particular program. But those first two are kind of my primary business endeavors. And when I set out, I'm like, okay, these two have to fulfill all my now financial needs and all my future financial needs. That way, I don't ever feel like I'm having to get approval or kind of have a tug of war to make sure that my family's taken care of, my, you know, my experiences, my retirement, any of that's taken care of, right? And what's so great about that is it creates so much peace of mind and so much autonomy and flexibility, but I kind of know how much emphasis I want to put on each. And I know, you know, which are the more, I guess, foundational or key parts of what I do. In fact, I would tell you that division two is the lifeblood of everything that I do. The products are fine, but really, I mean, I'm a coach at heart. And so division two is all about coaching, and that's the driver. And then division three is what I consider my kind of collaboration division, right? I mean, even though I've had a number of business partners through various ventures in the past and, you know, and I sold those interests and moved on, you know, a lot of people probably would have assumed like, hey, he doesn't want to collaborate. He doesn't want to do this. And it's just the opposite. I love, you know, putting my head together with somebody else and figuring out how we can do something at a high level and create something or add value to the market. But I wanted Division Three to be something that existed where if I'm going to take on a project, the primary driver will never be money. It's going to be, it's a cool project I want to do with somebody that they'll be fun to work with. So I never wanted to feel like, hey, I'm going to do this project just because there's a potential for financial gain, but I'm going to tolerate what the project is or who the project's with. And so at any point in time, I'm probably, you know, using that Division Three category to work with two or three different projects. It's been great because I know going in, hey, this is what I bring to the table, and either I'm a fit or I'm not. And, you know, I can work with people that are great to work with. I can do things that I'm excited about, but there's not really that risk that I ever feel like my family's livelihood's at stake with this project. So I'm having to compromise. And for me, like, I don't know if this framework would work for anybody else, but for me, it is, I mean, it's been really a lifesaver for me to categorize things into, no, it's okay to take on certain projects because other needs are being met over here. So I can do this other thing that might be fun and exciting and allow me to work with people I enjoy in this other part. So, you know, I think the biggest takeaway from something like that, at least from my perspective, is you have to design your business to serve you, the way that you're wired, what your goals are. I know how I'm wired. I know what's important to me. I know that I want to spend my time coaching and consulting and connecting with other people and creating valuable resources that are going to hopefully enhance somebody's business and maybe even enhance their life. I know that I'm going to set guardrails that allow me to spend time with my family, that allow me to spend time with my friends and do things that I enjoy. And I'm not going to let my business overwhelm me, but that's me. Those are my goals. Those are my objectives. And I think each of us have to define that for ourselves and design or architect a business that allows us to reach our personal goals and to have the things that we want in our life. So kind of putting this all together, you know, I'd like to thank Justin for helping me record this episode. You know, it was kind of fun to backtrack and look at my, you know, kind of my journey to get here and be able to share some of that with you guys, because I know that, you know, that's part of good business for us is connecting with one another, feeling like it were more than a transaction or more than just kind of this internet relationship. We want to understand where people come from and what they're about. And I want to thank you guys for, you know, taking the time to kind of listen to the journey and for so many of you to be part of it. So thanks a lot. And, you know, we'll be back with maybe a more traditional Ideal Business Show with different guests, you know, over the next few episodes. But in the meantime, hopefully you got something valuable out of this, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening. We've got a special gift for our listeners. We're giving away 52 cut and paste newsletters that you could start using for your fitness business today. To get your special gift, head on over to patrigsby.com/gift.